Well, welcome everyone. I'm Andrew Scanlon with Kimley Horn. I get the pleasure of giving you a high-level briefing as to some of the airport facts. We have about 15 minutes overall. I want to save time for questions, so we'll try to wrap up in about 10 minutes. As you can appreciate, that's not a lot of time to dig deep on anything. So we do have a more information spot over there. We've got a notepad here with a marker. If you have something specific that you want to dig in deeper on, just make a note of it. We'll take a note of it and get some more information back to you. All right. So we'll talk real briefly on the tenant information, sources of revenues and expenses at the airport, some of the operational data, talk a little bit about the flight patterns, and we do have a little bit of information on case studies of airport closure information. Yes, absolutely. So currently there's about 171 based aircraft on the airport, and based aircraft is aircraft that is parked there for more than 6 months of the year, considered airworthy, able to fly. That's the qualifications to become a based aircraft. Most of them are going to be the smaller fixed-wing aircraft that you see parked out on the apron area. There are also a lot of gliders, so if you're on the north side of the airport, you see these long, skinny trailers with a fin on them. Those are where the gliders are stored. And there's two based helicopters right now. There's a lot of recreational use of the airport, and there are several business owners. And you can see a list of the businesses on the right-hand slide. Not going to go through everything. We do have some of the owners represented as part of this group as well. Historical based aircraft, you can see the trend. It's declined over time. We're, again, around 171, which is a little bit up from where it was in 2020, last year of data that we had available from the FAA. And the colors represent the different types of aircraft. The dark blue, light blue that you see mostly on the slide are the fixed-wing aircraft, single-engine aircraft. The light top of all those, that's the other category, as the FAA calls it. That's generally referred to as the gliders. It's others or experimental aircraft would fit into that other category in FAA's terms.
What caused the drop over there?
Couldn't say specifically because I don't have that long of a history with the airport. But this is kind of a trend we're seeing overall. It's just kind of a decline with some of the smaller aircraft in industry.
And this doesn't illustrate the actual airplanes that utilize the airport, does it?
Correct. This is just the ones that call it home, if you will.
Andrew, did you say that this is common at smaller airports or just here?
I've seen this at a lot of smaller airports I've worked at.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and they always say a picture is worth 1,000 words. So this is December 31, 2001. Just looking back on Google, you can see all kinds of airplanes parked all over the ramp. And then in May 21 of 2020, you see much fewer airplanes parked out there. Some airports, you'll see a trend of decrease, but that's because there's more hangars. They take up more space, so there's less room to actually occupy. Or for planes to park, we haven't seen that specifically here. Sure. Yeah, gliders are pretty full up there. All right, and then operating expenses and revenues, and really what we're just identifying here, what are the sources of these? What are the sources of revenues for the airport? It's going to be leases of land for someone to come in and build on top of, a hangar or a business that is related to aeronautical use, hangar rent, so the city does own several hangars out there. They'll lease those out to tenants. Aviation fuel sales, so all the fuel that is sold, the city gets a couple of cents per gallon as revenue. Miscellaneous, which is exactly that, miscellaneous, and then there are some investments they gather some interest on. And then the city does accept grants for some of the capital investment that's needed out at the airport.
Are those the FAA grants?
Correct. Also, Colorado DOT, CDOT, has grants that they provide as well. I'd have to defer to the airport manager on that. The numbers for these? For the... Yeah.
Right, so what percentage comes from that? What comes from aviation?
The grants, $108,000 a year in terms of grants, and that's due to about 2026. We've got CDOT grants from over there in 2025 or 2026 for $300,000 each, and then every 4 years we get the title of the grant from the FAA for $600,000. So, that's a little bit short. Rising aid leases is about $400,000 a year.
So you run in the black every year, pretty much?
Yeah. Yeah, current trajectory.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of use?
That's just the meaning of the capital intensity, so rates.
Okay.
So up or new revenue sources.
Correct. All right. Good dialogue. So this is the operations side. So when we talk about aircraft operations, we're talking about takeoffs and landings. Some of you are probably familiar with the term touch and go, which is the training activity that would count as two operations for the airport, one landing and one takeoff. Generally speaking, clear days, you're going to have more activity out there, nice weather, you're going to have more activity. There is not what is known as instrument approach procedures, so when it's cloudy or there's a big storm that's rolling through, you're not going to have activity at the airport. The airport just doesn't have a way for the airplanes to get there. Averaging about 150 operations a day, or about 55,000 operations annually. The airport is not staffed or manned 24/7, 365 days of the year. And up until May of last year, there was not a way to accurately record how many operations were happening. It was kind of a sense of what was happening was kind of the basis. So you'll see that when we look at the chart of historical information, you can see where it's kind of that anecdotal, well, we think we're about this much operations. And the exact number is not accurate, but it is a good sense of how the activity was at the airport. The other thing to kind of point out is 2007, when the last master plan was, you're probably about 70,000 operations, and today we're around 55,000 operations, so a little bit down from the last master plan, which is something that will be a consideration as we go forward with the master plan and doing noise modeling. You know, all that factors in, how busy the airport is, the types of planes that are using the airport.
So if somebody's doing touch and goes, each touch and go qualifies as one?
Two.
Two. Oh.
One landing, one takeoff. And then speaking of the flight patterns, just have a couple of pieces of information. You guys are probably all familiar with the noise abatement procedure that's published. It's a guide for the pilots. It's available on the city website. It was something that was developed as part of the previous master plan. And then we have a little bit of information here about the traffic patterns. So as I said, I've been doing airport planning for a long time. I'm not a pilot. I have too many kids. I cannot afford to fly. Seven kids kind of stops you from having the time or money to fly. I figured it out, yeah. It took a while. I'm a slow learner. But one of the things that I found interesting is when we look at that noise abatement procedure and what that traffic pattern is, it's a pretty small box that the pilots are operating in. So in the black, you kind of see what is the quote-unquote standard. There really is no standard, but kind of the guide, if you will, of what the traffic pattern is. And then in the red, you can see what the bolder one is. So it's a pretty tight pattern. A lot to ask of the pilots and the aircraft as they're operating through that pattern. Probably not as well as a pilot in this room, but as you're flying, I'll take a departure for example. You're having to keep a certain amount of airspeed so that you have the right amount of lift. So when you start lifting, you start losing your airspeed. And then as you're doing that, and then you're asking the plane to turn, you're also asking more of that aircraft. You're having to push more power on, otherwise you'll get into a stall, which means you'll fall out of the sky. The pilots in the room can correct me. Again, I'm not a pilot. Close enough. All right. And then
there's a pattern, so everyone knows, everyone agrees there's a standard pattern to fly, so it's organized, everyone's landing.
Great point, Whitney.
Sometimes you expect what people are in, so it's for safety.
Sure, great point. So with the ADS-B data, we're able to kind of see what's happening. Here's a couple of snapshots of a busy time on the left-hand side of the screen. This is about a two-hour window. You can see a lot of lines. All this represents aircraft that are 7,500 feet or below. So you can see that definite pattern in there around Boulder Airport. And then you can see a lot of other activity going on. And then you can see a same amount of time but a slower day. And what the comparison is. And it's not just Boulder, it's really the area. There's a lot of activity in the area. This was a two-day range, and you can see on the bottom you have a Rocky Mountain Metro, very definite pattern, a lot of activity there. You have Erie off to the right-hand side, then you have Boulder on the left-hand side. So I got told we have 5 minutes left, so I'll breeze through these real quick. This is just really, the different types of planes, the ones that are in red and bold are the louder ones of the examples. So these are the ones that you probably hear. Some of the higher performing turbine aircraft, some military aircraft that might use the airport. See those once in a while? The 1940s ball, some of the aircraft you might see at the ball. And firefighting, the ones on the left-hand side are ones that have and can use Boulder Airport. And then for the larger airplanes, that would be something that could come out of Rocky Mountain Metro. Just the runway's not long enough at Boulder to accommodate them. Yeah. Yep. Closure information, this is not going to give you all the information on what it is. Just really high level, it's not an easy process. It's not a very prescribed process. It's pretty long and protracted, generally results in a lot of conversations in court and through the process. A lot of the examples I've seen, the FAA will apply FAA order 5190.6B, that's airport compliance, as they go through the process and work with the airport sponsor. Need to repay AIP grants that have been accepted. $11.7 million is the total so far. And that might be prorated depending on time. That's something that would be part of that negotiation with the FAA. And there was land purchase with grant money. That is something that also would be as part of that conversation.
In the newspaper, they banned the number $100 million to buy out the FAA from the airport. Where would they get that number from?
That I wouldn't know.
Yeah. It's been referenced a couple times. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, I have some, again, we'll provide copies of this. It has a lot of detailed information, and we just don't have time to get into all this. But three different grant programs, some of the specific language from the FAA order that speaks to the fact that land grants, even before 1981 or 82, whatever their magic cutoff date was, It suggests that it's arguable that the land still would need to be used as airport purpose, airport use in perpetuity, even though it didn't explicitly state that in the grant at that time. So again, this is, we'll provide the copies of this, and this is something we'll talk more about, I think, in our next CWG. Case studies, I picked on three, Santa Monica, probably one of the better known ones, Rialto, and then East Hampton, which just happened last year. So just real quick timeline with Santa Monica. I think the really important thing to understand, since the late 1970s is when they first started really trying to push the direction of, hey, we need to do something here. The community is affected by the noise. We need to restrict the use of the airport. We need to limit the noise. That started way back in the late 70s. And it wasn't until 2017 that the FAA and the city came to an agreement on everything, and the FAA is allowing the airport to close at the end of 2028. So it's a very long, protracted process to get there. Multiple cases in federal court as you went through that process. Rialto was a little simpler process, but one of the unique items with Rialto Airport, it's kind of similar situation, declining revenues, and became a drain on the city. And they said, hey, you know, this was kind of the housing boom. If you recall, early 2000s, things were going really swell. That was about 700 acres of developable land for commercial and homes, and they were really excited about doing that. The FAA Congress agreed to it, but 45% of the sale of the land had to go to provide facilities at a nearby airport, San Bernardino International Airport. So they had to invest 45% of the sale to build hangars and taxiways and aprons to accommodate the misplaced aircraft. And the last one, it's time. Last one I can cover in 2 seconds here. Another unique situation with noise being a big concern. The airport closed as a public airport, but has turned into a privately run airport. The city runs it as a private airport with prior permission required. So if you wanted to land there, you'd have to get permission from the city to do so. And that was it for our slides. And it's time to rotate around.
Thank you.
Thank you all. If you stick them on the board there, that'd be awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm not sure. This was group one. I'm not sure. I guess you probably just go right. Group one. Yep. And yeah, I was on the call. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's tight.
We're the airport guys, we're on time.
I don't know.
It's random because the U.S. agriculture goes through their animals so quick. They don't have vaccines for them. They send away the rest of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wherever.
I think we're okay. Yeah. Okay. This everybody? Okay. This goes quick. So, welcome everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. That's my document. Thank you, Casey. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. My name is Andrew Scanlon. I'm with Kimberly Horn. We have about 15 minutes together to just go over this, so we're not going to be able to get very deep on anything. But we do have a notepad, currently it's by Rob there, along with pens and markers that you can write down anything you have questions on or want to see more information on, and we'll work on getting that over to you. We will make a copy of this available at the end of all this as part of the meeting summary. We'll have a copy of the slides to you all as well. So we'll just dive right in because we don't have a lot of time. So in terms of tenants, we have 171 based aircraft out at the airport. And a based aircraft is an aircraft that is stationed at the airport for more than 6 months of the year. So 6 months in a day, it would count as a based aircraft. It also has to be airworthy and able to fly. Those are the qualifications for it being counted as a based aircraft.
Can you include these things in that? Because when I read the, I think it was sheet two, it was like, okay, there's 120, but it wasn't clear that 171 was the general number and 129. And then didn't define how long they had to be.
Sure.
So that would be very helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can we get these slides?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll make sure.
Yeah.
Updated PowerPoint.
Yeah. 129 of those are the fixed wing. So if you drive by the airport, you see the aircraft parking out on the ramp. Those are the fixed wing aircraft you see out there. On the north side of the airport, you'll see the gliders. They're in the trailers with the fin on them. Some of them will be assembled that you see out there, but most of them are stored in a trailer. And you'll see two helicopters that are based out there. A lot of recreational use. There's also a lot of businesses out there, as seen on the right-hand side. I'm not going to get into all the services provided. We just don't have the time, but there's quite a fair number of businesses out at the airport. Historical-based aircraft, you can see it's been kind of a downward trend over time. It could be a variety of different factors. I've not been involved for the last 20 years at Boulder Airport, so I can't tell you the specifics. But you can see the split has pretty much been constant, a lot of fixed-wing aircraft and a lot of gliders. The gliders is the light blue-gray on top, and the fixed-wing is the light blue on the bottom. And just, pictures worth a thousand words. This was in late 2001. You can see a lot of airplanes parked out on the ramp. You can see the glider trailers, some of the assembled gliders on the north-hand side. And then in May of 2020, you can compare the ramp is a bit more sparse. Gliders are still pretty full, but a bit less of them out there.
Can I make a comment to that?
I think that might suggest that use is going down. I think use is high, and also I've personally been on the hangar waiting list for 5 years. So who's based isn't necessarily who wants to be there. And I personally, it's a personal decision, wouldn't consider leaving an aircraft on the ramp just because our winter winds. December 31st, make sure I think we all know what we're doing. So, not to take up too much time, but I want to make that.
But, you know, part of your point, Keith, there's not a lot of building difference between the two. And sometimes when I work at airports, I see that the base aircraft has gone down over time, and it's because the apron space has been taken away by hangars, which you don't have the amount of density that way. You have less airplanes that you can park in the same amount of square footage. You have walls and things you have to be mindful of. So that's a great point there, Keith. Expenses and revenues. These are just the categories, not the actual numbers here, but you can see the different revenue categories. Leasing of land, whether that be for hangar development or a business that is based at the airport. Hangar rent, so the city does own multiple hangars out there that they'll rent out to tenants to use. They do also get a couple of cents from each gallon of fuel sold on the airport. That is a revenue, and you have a question?
I do, and can we get more detailed information in terms of how much revenue?
I don't have that. John has several round numbers off the top of his head that he could spit out if we were interested.
It's helpful to see it in the document, so that would be nice to know, so we have something to refer to.
Sure. Bottom line, at this point in time, the revenues exceed expenses by about $50,000, I think you were saying, John. You also have the expenses, the administration. Actually, on the revenue side, I do want to touch on grants. There are Colorado DOT grants and also FAA grants. Those are largely used for capital expenditures, pavement maintenance, those sort of things. So the capital projects on the expense side, the grants are primarily used to fund that. That isn't city income at that point. That's for NEON. That's not part of this. That's not part of this equation.
Okay. Well, that would be important since this property.
That's more of the economic benefit that, right? Yeah. Sure. And on the operations side, so when we talk about an operation, that's either a takeoff or a landing. So when you hear the term touch and go, that is both a landing and a takeoff. It's a training operation where pilot will come in, they'll land, and then immediately power up, take off again. So that is two operations. That's how it's counted. Generally, you're going to see more activity on the clear days out here as opposed to, like now, you probably won't see too much going on out there. About 150 operations a day or 55,000 operations annually. The airport is not staffed or manned at all times. So historically, the operations counts are a bit of a guess because there's not been someone out there counting every single plane. That changed in May of 2022. There's some technology in place that now allows the airport to count every operation. So when we look at the historical data, you'll see that, you know, guesses were kind of the same for several years. It's really just a kind of a measure of activity, not an actual number when we look historically. Gives you a sense of how much was happening, but not the actual to the one operation number. But from a sense, operations have also kind of decreased as the base aircraft have decreased. In 2007, when the last master plan was done, it was probably around 70,000. Annual operations, and today we're not too far off with about 55,000, 60,000, somewhere in there. Still a little bit of an estimate because we don't have a full year of data yet. Flight patterns. Most of you are probably aware of the noise abatement procedures. It's out on the website available for all to see. This is to try to avoid some of the sensitive noise receptors of the homes. Try to keep the aircraft noise away from them.
Can I point something out there too, Andrew?
Yeah.
I think it's clear for Boulder is north of the runway is all general traffic, power traffic. South of the runway is tow plane flyers. They stay pretty darn separate so they don't conflict with each other. So it's a little bit of a tale of two airports that way.
Where's the sky
going this one? I have no idea.
Really?
First thing you know.
There's some limited skydiving operations that happen basically right in the middle, right over the airport.
Yeah, we land right on the airport.
Does the two plane bars go over?
Playing flight paths when they arrive, you notice the building San Lazaro, which is to the east, and the Misty Village, which is to the west, and they split right between the two.
Yeah, we,
when you see the green arrow on the other side of the first.
Talk about this one.
Yeah.
Has been over the years some movement towards in a way to kind of adjust. So those flight tracks change a little bit.
Right now, they
split between the two.
Right
now, the tow plane traffic is east of Foothills Parkway. They're trying really hard, and they...
In the box. The return path, which goes directly over the airport.
The pilots, I do know, they work hard at that continuously every flight. So that's really good for people who are not pilots here to know that.
One of the things, I'm not a pilot. I have 7 kids. I cannot afford to fly. pretty expensive hobby. But in all my years of doing planning at airports, I've not run across an airport that has such a tight traffic pattern. And the black kind of represents the standard traffic pattern or recommended traffic pattern. It can go 1.5 miles out from the airport on either side and on the side that they're cruising parallel with the runway. The red box here represents the Boulder traffic pattern. It is much smaller. So it's quite an ask of the aircraft and pilots to be able to make those maneuvers.
Yeah,
it's 3/4 of a mile. Yeah. Just a couple of screenshots. Again, we do have the ability to track data now. So the left-hand side shows a busy period of time. It's about 2 hours of time. Sometime in the summer, just shows all the aircraft activity that's 7,500 feet and below. So you can see a pretty definite pattern of operations around Boulder Airport with the power traffic. You see a little bit on the south with the gliders and the tow planes, and then a lot of other activity just in the area. And then you can see same time period, about 2 hours of time, but during a not such a busy time of day or season. You can really see the traffic pattern defined in this. And then just zooming out, kind of bigger picture of what's happening in the region, you can see Rocky Mountain Metro has pretty significant amount of activity, and then Erie, and then Boulder. It's just a pretty busy area in general. We got the 5-minute mark, so we have to skim through some of this here. Types of planes out there, general aviation, this is what you'll see. These are the single engine fixed wing airplanes. The ones that are in red are kind of the noisier ones of the groups. Turbine powered aircraft, so these are a little faster, a little higher performance aircraft. Military aircraft that might use the airport, primarily helicopters and some of the real small, fixed wing aircraft. When we talk about the event, the 1940s ball, some of the airplanes you'll see out there. And then firefighting, the ones on the left side, certainly very capable of using Boulder Airport. Right-hand side would need to use a different airport because of the runway length. They just require more runway, so Rocky Mountain Metro would be one of the preferred options for them. We won't get into this a lot. This is more the second meeting, but I have several slides, and again, we'll have the information out. But it's really not an easy process. It's pretty long. It's not a checklist sort of thing. It requires a lot of negotiation with the FAA, along the way, a lot of levels to FAA approval, the need potentially to pay money back to the FAA for land purchase and grant money, how much all that is, can't explicitly say because that's part of the process in talking through the FAA. Yes?
Can you also, in this process, give us, and I don't know if maybe that's the data group, but the covenants that the airport is under?
Talking about the grant assurances? Are you talking about the grant assurances?
Grant assurances.
Okay.
I think a lot of people would be shocked as to how much land the city versus how much FAA grant ratio is. Like, the city didn't, as far as I understand, I might be wrong, the city didn't buy outright of their own funds all that much. It was mostly bought with FAA funds.
Right. Those were my understanding. Like
20
year increments.
Right. I'm saying how much is bought by everyone versus just, and everyone being the United States versus, you know, just the people in the border. It seems like there's this preconception that what we bought, we need to get it back, that type of thing. Right. And I just wanted to show the percentage of how much was really paid for by all taxpayers versus just the border.
And I think, you know, the question I was asked before, you know, right, saying, well, you know, that wasn't city, now you're sure it wasn't city, but Boulder has supposedly the highest density of climate scientists in the world. So there's really a lot of research that happens here, and there's a lot of money that comes from NOAA, NASA, you know, like all that stuff. So that would also be something that would be important, I think. Airport places,
Sure. You kind of touched on land purchase, the FAA grants. There's different grant programs over time. We don't have the time to get into a lot of nuts and bolts and probably need an attorney really to get through that. But there are some of the language that is out there the FAA would be looking at. To your point, it's about a quarter of the airport was purchased with FAA grants. A little over a quarter of the airport.
Oh, but it's probably approximately
147. Yeah. Do have a couple case studies here just to real quickly go through. Santa Monica is probably one of the more drawn-out cases. This started late in the 1970s. The city residents were kind of tired of an airport being there, making a lot of noise, polluting over their community, and Santa Monica was basically 5% of all of the city's land. The airport was about 5%, so they wanted affordable housing. They saw it as an economic driver. It wasn't until 2017 that the FAA and the city came to agreement, and the FAA said, yes, you can close it in 2028. So a very long, drawn-out process. Rialto started really early 2000s. Those may recall that's kind of the housing boom time. It's about 700 acres of land. The city was really excited about redeveloping that for commercial development, homes. So that went through relatively quickly. But one of the things that was really important there is the FAA, as part of the agreement, 45% of that land sale had to be put to another airport to accommodate those based aircraft, those tenants that were losing their home at Rialto. Mm-hmm. So of that total land sale, 45% went to another airport. And last one, which just happened last year, is a little different twist. Some of the same drivers, noise being the primary one. This one, instead of a pure closure of the airport, the FAA agreed to allow the city to make it a private airport with a prior permission required. So if you wanted to go to that airport, land at that airport, you would need to get the city's approval to do so as a private airport with the prior permission required, and that just happened last year. So we are out of time. If you have any other questions and want to see more information on, please write it down.
Feel free if you have any questions, concerns, or any other talking points that you want to.
City that tried to close an airport this year, and they decided not to.
you know, what state? Louisiana? I've read about them too. Fairly recent, yeah. Fairly recent.
Yeah, like
Oceanside was another one. That was been a while. Oceanside, I'm familiar with it. I did the master plan there several years ago. They had 13 acres of land that they bought with FAA money. They told the FAA we want to close it. The FAA said no way.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, John. You're back. Never met you, but thanks for the picture.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on to you. I sat in enough of those Aspen meetings. I know how you did it. You made Tom do the work.
There was a lot of people in the front there. Oh, cool. You're right there. We have that. If you were right there, it's nice to see that snorkel go in, collect the water. Were you there?
I went to a few of them. Two, three. Yes, I am.
That's so good.
That's why we picked him.
It is an example of it. Airport, you're protected by the monitor.
Yeah, exactly.
You're pretty aggressive. Yeah. Well, I don't like what you're saying. Can't run.
Is this everybody, Casey? Is this everybody?
I think we're missing Carl.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. So this is kind of the data session. Obviously, 15 minutes. We're not going to get real deep into the data. We do have a board back there with more information and some stickies here. If there's something you want to dive deeper on, please write it down, let us know. And the presentation will be made available as part of the meeting summary. So you're going to see some, we'll run out of time towards the end, I've found out twice now, with some very text-heavy slides that you'll want to read through more carefully, and that will be available to you. So with that, we'll start diving in. Tenant information. So there are 171 based aircraft out at the airport, and a based aircraft is an aircraft that is parked at the airport for more than 6 months. So at least 6 months in a day. It has to be airworthy, has to be able to fly, basically. That's what constitutes a based aircraft. Of that, there are 129 of them that are fixed wing aircraft. So if you drive out there, you'll see a bunch of airplanes out on the ramp. Those are the fixed wing aircraft. And there are 40 gliders. Those are on the north side of the airport. And if you drive on Independence Road, you'll see trailers with fins on them or a wing on the top. Those are the gliders. They're generally kept in a trailer. You'll see some assembled out there as well. two helicopters, a lot of recreational use, and a lot of business owners. And you can see a list of the various businesses out at the airport. We don't have time to dig into each one individually, but there are several of them out there. In terms of historical-based aircraft at the airport, you can see the trend. It's been going down over time. A lot of different reasons for that. It's kind of a trend in industry that we've seen as well, but it just kind of has decreased over time.
What do you mean by historical-based aircraft?
So accounting of each year, basically. So every year, the airport management will go out and do accounting of how many based aircraft are out there.
Less
over time.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so thank you. Do this a few times, you forget what you're going to say on all of them. So the dark blue is the fixed wing aircraft. The top, the light blue portion is the, they call it the other category the FAA does. But that's really going to be representative of the gliders and experimental aircraft. And then just pictures worth a thousand words. So this was late 2001. You can see a lot of airplanes out there on the ramp. Pretty full on the north side with the gliders. And then May of 2020, you can see a lot less airplanes out on the ramp. And the gliders are roughly the same, but you can see a few more holes up there as well. So kind of, again, before and after. And one of the other presentations, a comment was made that there really hasn't been a lot of change in the buildings out there. Sometimes when we work at airports, we see that declining trend, but that's because there's been more hangars. A hangar takes up more space to accommodate one airplane than being able to park down on the ramp. That hasn't happened here. It's really just been a slow decline. Operating expenses and revenue, we already have a request for more detailed information because all we're talking about here are really what the categories are. So revenue, land leases, so the city will lease land for someone to come in and build a hangar or make another investment for their business to be at. Hangar rents, the city does own hangars. They'll lease that out for folks to come in, base their airplanes there. The city also collects a couple of cents on each gallon of fuel sold, so they get a little bit of revenue from the fuel sales at the airport. And the last one I want to touch on is the grants, and this is from CDOT, Colorado DOT, and the FAA are the two grant sources. And those grants are really used for the capital projects you see on the expense side. It takes a lot of money to maintain the pavement, and that's really where that money comes from, is from the grants. You can see the expenses there. You have a question, Ben?
I was going to say, on the grants, is there a bucket of money that's still available from those grants for continued improvements, or how does that work, or was that just when the buildings were initially delivered, they were delivered through the use of grants?
It's not even buildings, mostly. Okay. It's pavement.
Pavement. Okay, so there's a grant to maintain, available to maintain the pavement still?
It's insufficient, but yes.
Okay.
So every 4 years through the FAA program, there's $600,000 available, which doesn't go very far on an airport.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember and
then I would hear, all
the revenue gets
generated at the airport stays in the airport, and all the expenses of the airport get paid out of the bucket of money because
we're a, what do they call it, enterprise zone?
Airport enterprise fund. Where does that sales tax go? That is a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if you heard that, John.
Sure. Wow. But we always hear, and all of the guys in the airport stays in the airport.
Right.
So sure.
Just saying.
So it's taxed on the activities at the airport.
We'll look into both.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if it's over a 40-year period with that.
Yeah.
Are
you providing a service or a product?
We are charged sales tax on the rental order.
So follow-up question to that. All the expenses that are listed on here, do all of those expenses come out of the airport enterprise fund?
Yes.
So
we
you're doing property tax.
Yeah. They don't call it property tax.
Possessory use. Possessory interest tax is in the property tax.
Yeah, so that kind of goes to the property tax. But they're charging for the property tax just because the city doesn't pay property taxes, but the person leasing the land pays the property
tax. Because the property taxes are what they're accounting for.
Possessory use taxes.
Yes.
This is all the way up.
Yeah. 2026, 2027, we're in the bed. So the current age of average is the airport fees and property expenses.
In the percentage, how far into the red are?
$700,000 in the red. Oh, and okay. In 2026, I want to say it's
like 50% of the total budget, or. And so you're almost 40% into the red? Okay. We said 7 out of 800 is almost 9% into the red.
Yeah. Did they grant it as well?
We did grants, they had as well. Yeah. State grants are a little less predictable. Since COVID, we get $145,000 each year from 23 to 26. And there's a few levels before that. And then, every 4 years, we get a federal grant for $600,000. So we're up next for that 4 year cycle in 2025.
Gotcha. And so, does that offset the $700,000 in 2027, or is that already accounted for and we're still off $700,000 in 2027?
Yes,
already accounted
for. Okay.
Thank you. All right. Aircraft operations. Yeah, go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, I have another question, too.
Sorry.
Trying to figure out the one that I have on the test. So this is a pretty interesting piece of paper. It's the 2020 economic impact statement that the city did. They're almost 16.7. The decline of the in this revenue statement, or
this, I believe, is a this I believe is a snapshot in time, so it's not necessarily forward looking. It is a snapshot of when this was done, which I think is about 2 years old now.
Same rate as the utilization.
Yeah, Ben, you had some. Okay. Yeah, we have 5 minutes. I got the nasty note already. So, operations, when we talk about operations at the airport, we're talking about takeoffs and landings. Those would each count as an operation. So, when we talk about a touch and go, which is a training operation, aircraft comes in, lands, immediately powers up, takes off. That counts for two operations. Generally, you're going to see more activity on clear days. About 55,000 operations annually. We still don't have a full year of data to know a specific number. Next slide. Next slide, you'll see. Up until May, we haven't had a way of counting every operation. It's a little bit more just guessing, if you will. Correct. So here you go, Harry. This also has declined over time. Again, we don't have exact data for what's happened in the past, but it's a good relative indicator of what's happened in the past, what's happening now. I think key point here is in 2007, which is when the last master plan was, roughly 70,000 operations a year, about 55,000 now, so a little bit lower than then, but not too much difference. Itinerant or visiting? Oh, that's great, because... It is the terminal area forecast. Again, it's not. And it could be, you know, I've seen this at other airports. They'll put a sensor out there for like a month. And, you know, acoustical sensor and count the noise and extrapolate over 12 months might have been what happened. Hard to say at this point. Flight patterns. I think most of you are probably familiar with this document. It's on the website.
I'm sorry. Can you go back just to that? I was trying to process that. So local general aviation, which is a majority of that, that's flying to fly. That's people that live around here, pilots that are.
That's training primarily.
Okay. So is this available to show how much is business use or how much, you know what I mean? The breakout between all the different. Yeah, exactly. We talked a lot about the research component and all of that. What's the science, environmental? So now we have a flight count and. I'd be curious to see how much of those entities are actually utilizing the airport for, right?
Not in this. I mean, that'd probably take quite a bit of effort to go through the data.
Less than 10%. Probably less than 5%.
Scientific research
wise? Yeah, because they usually they're based there and they take off and then sometimes they'll be gone for a while. But they're not daily flights. I mean, you're there. I mean, Scientific Aviation goes, they are, you know, shot over, might use their plane every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, this is that's just a guess.
That becomes a little interesting because. It's usually within a certain radius of the airport, and within that radius, you have Rocky Mountain, you have Erie. So I think what we're talking about here really is the activity at Boulder, not really the activity for Rocky Mountain. Now, if folks are coming from Rocky Mountain to Boulder,
so that's what I'm wondering, if that gray bar.
Some of that is probably accounting for Rocky Mountain Metro. Somebody taking off from there, coming to Boulder, and doing some training here definitely would include that.
And since we had a tracking system prior to 2022, how reliable would we assume that this is? Because, I mean, 2019, I mean, that's like far from everybody around here. So how reliable would we assume?
I couldn't tell you reliability. It's, yeah, I don't know how, because it's the responsibility of the airport manager, so I don't know what the airport manager at that time did to come up with that number. Yeah. Somebody got lazy and said, well, they did that last year.
This stuff in the blue is in the master plan. This is the projection of the master plan. And this is data that was collected by the previous airport managers.
And how did he?
There was like a physical sensor that he used to calculate monthly operation. And then when he left in 2019, it all kind of fell apart. And the acoustical sensor got
moves on the runway, I think just some markers. And then this is your estimate, 55,000 here. So it's not good. We're now operating at less than 50% of what the historic highs were. And we're operating at 50% of what the master plan from 2007 projected would be.
So going forward from May of 2022, we have very solid numbers.
Got it. Actually, I have one quick question on this one, just because I read this slide earlier. It makes mention of three runways. Or did I read that wrong? 8 and 26 and, like... But then when I look at the map, I saw, like, one.
So, 8 and 26 are one runway, right? So
oh, okay.
So, if you have a runway, if you're landing this way, it's 8. If you're landing this way, it's 26. And so, and you pick which way you're landing based on wind.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
That's why I was
like, it's confusing.
Yeah, so this is available for pilots in the red areas, designated areas that where homes are. Try to avoid those areas. So I don't have a lot to say about this other than that it's something that's out there. Probably needs to be updated because it's been a little while.
I've got a little bit to say. I mean, this is a direct time, but I was going to send you guys, you and Glenn, a letter on that. There's our voluntary avoid that area is like directly like the RNAV approach to BJC for runway 12 flies straight over the center of
gun barrel one?
Yeah, and it's anybody flying an RNAV to 12, it's like you're flying right over the avoid this area.
To what runway do you know?
The RNAV to 12.
32.
And somebody had mentioned, Glenn had just mentioned that he thought that there might be an issue with one of the approaches for Longmont as well, Lance Brand. Or no, not Glenn, Jeff. I don't know Jeff's last name.
Oh, okay.
Jeff Barlow.
Oh, Barlow.
Barlow, right.
Good to know. Thank you. One thing I did want to point out with relation to the noise, voluntary noise procedure, shown in the black is kind of your typical guidelines for how to construct a traffic pattern. So the approach areas will extend about a mile and a half out from the runways. And shown in red is what the Boulder traffic pattern is. And I'm not a pilot. I have 7 kids. I cannot afford to fly. But I do know from my experience of working in airports, this is a pretty tight pattern. You're asking a lot of the pilots, a lot of the aircraft to be able to execute this on a repeated basis. So that much I do know.
And is there a lot of pilots who fly other airports, based on the airports, who will come to Boulder because of the challenges to land here versus going to Longmont or some of the other airports? I mean, when I was in my training, we going to Longmont for training because it's so challenging here. You got to leave this one end and clip it the other.
And we're comfortable in the mountains too with wind. We have like a weird wind.
The lake is yourself.
Depends on how fast you're going. So visually, this is a couple-hour snapshot during a busy time and a not-so-busy time. So you can kind of see some of visually what's happening out there. And all these lines are aircraft that are at 7,500 feet or below. So you can see definite pattern work going on, but you see a lot of just other activity in the area. Can't tell you if it was from Longmont, Boulder, or Rocky Mountain Metro from this, but it's just activity the sensor's picking up in the area. And again, you can still see that definite pattern. Zooming out, you can see it's just pretty busy in the region. You have Rocky Mountain Metro on the south, very busy airport. This is a 2-day snapshot. You have Erie over here, So you have Boulder. You can see the powered traffic on the north side. You can see the tow planes and glider traffic on the south side, and just a lot of activity in the region.
Speaking to that, there are about 6,000 aircraft in the air, commercial aircraft in the air, say at 10 o'clock in the morning, to give somebody a rough idea of what's over the United States. 6,000 airplanes at any time. Well, 1,000 people in the air at once.
Just me, I should plug in.
There's a lot of people at that.
I haven't gotten the nasty gram yet, but we'll go through these pretty quickly. This is some examples of what you'll see out there from the fixed wing category, general aviation. Those that have the red type font are the louder planes of the groups. So the Cessna 337 is a pretty noisy airplane comparatively. Next group are the turbine-powered aircraft. These are faster performers, higher performer aircraft that you'll see out there, potentially out there. Military aircraft you might see out there on occasion.
No.
No. Yeah. Good catch. The 1940s ball, some of the airplanes you might see as part of that.
Is that still showing?
I don't know.
Is that still showing?
The
airplane is not
showing? We're going to add it to the aircraft. So, you know what?
And then firefighting. The ones on the left are aircraft that can and have used Boulder Airport. The ones on the right are larger aircraft. They would not be able to use Boulder Airport. There's just not enough runway there. So Rocky Mountain Metro would probably be a great alternative for them. I don't think they have a permanent base. I'm not sure where the nearest permanent base is, but. Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So airport closure information, this is really just scratching the surface. We'll have more information as part of the next meeting. And again, there's some text-heavy slides here. I'm not going to get into reading it all. This will be made available. But kind of a summary, it's not an easy process. It's long. It's drawn out. It's can be expensive, can get into court cases. It can be a pretty difficult process. Usually you're coming in here and telling me.
I wasn't aware that we could repay.
That's part of negotiations, I would say. I don't think it's.
Just kidding. Do you want to wrap up?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So, yeah, more to come on this. And, I mean, you'll see there's several text-heavy slides here. We do have a little bit of information on case studies. Santa Monica is a very long, drawn-out process starting in the late 70s. Finally, in 2017, the FAA and the city came to an agreement, and closure will be in 2028. Rialto was a little easier, but a unique thing here is part of the process was the city needed to pay 45% of the land sale to invest in aviation facilities at another airport. So all the tenants that were displaced, they had to pay to another airport. And
doesn't Boulder,
was every 9 acres, 49 acres. All of that was still fair market value. 49 of the acres and fair market value goes to
It's a potential. And the last one is kind of a little different spin. It was converted to a private airport with prior permission required. So if you wanted to land there, you needed to get permission from the owner, the city, in order to do so. And back into the main room. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.